Good afternoon.
Yeah.
Justice loving, freedom fighters. My name is Wendell Harris, and I have the privilege of serving as chair of the first of the Wisconsin Conference of Branches NAACP as first vice president. On behalf of our president, Lily Wilson, who's not able to be with us due to her travels, I'm going to get us started on the fourth day of action, Wisconsin Forward Together, Moral Monday Movement. And I'll start with a prayer that was forwarded to us by Reverend Barbara. Opening prayer. You who hear the cries of all who suffer, listen to your people crying. A mother in Ferguson cries out for justice. Mothers in Central America cry for their children. We're housed on the U.S. border. 150,000 people in American prisons are serving life sentences for nonviolent drug offenses. God of justice, hear our cries and move swiftly with your mighty hand to save us. With that prayer, I'm going to turn this program over to Mr. Greg Lewis, who is our Greg Jones. Greg Jones, who is probably the best political action chair in the entire 40 years of the NAACP in Wisconsin, according to his wife, Gwen. So Greg, take over, and I want to say again, thank you to all of the people in the Dane County branch. Our president is just, thank you all for what you've been doing to help keep this moving. So thank you, Greg, take over.
All right.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome to the fourth day of action. Equal protection under the law. But I'm so glad to be compared and referenced to Greg Lewis. He was one of our clergy members on Thursday who brought to the group a powerful, powerful moral statement about conditions in Milwaukee and challenged us to address those issues through our Forward Wisconsin movement. So on behalf of the Forward Together Wisconsin Coalition, and all of our members, you are welcome here today. A bright, sunny, warm day. So we want to begin today with our speakers who have graciously given up their time, talent, skill to speak to issues of equal protection under the law. The first gentleman that I'm going to bring forward, I met him doing the activities, the marches, the rallies back in 2011. For some reason, I would run into this gentleman almost every day, either noon or in the evening. So from Veterans for Peace, Brother Will Williams.
I want to thank everyone for being here and wish it was more, but I know today is Sunday and a lot of people are in church or doing whatever. But it's good that you're here because someone have to stand up against what's happening in this country. You know, I listen to people talk about Ferguson, which was tragic. But what's going on is deeper than Ferguson. What's going on is we live in a society with institutionalized racism, structured right within and by our government. So every facet of a brown person's life feels that effect. I've heard people speak that they can't understand why people was burning the stores or looting. And I don't condone that. But since I have drank from that bitter cup, I can understand it. I can understand that when people wake up every day, when a mother wonders if her son will make it home that night alive, that these frustrations build up over the years and at some point they explode. I think the mind is like a rubber band. You can stretch it out so far and at some point it'll break. I've heard people talk about the militarization of the police forces, which which is part of that problem. Because to me, and I'm a vet, I did 2 tours in Vietnam, but I know that with the equipment that the police get that's used in war, they also get that military mentality where they began to see people not as people, but as the enemy. So it makes it easy for them to gun somebody down without any reason. The path we are on is a path to destruction in this country. Dr. King spoke of it in 1967 when he said, and I'll paraphrase, that when a country spends more on defense than it does the social programs for the uplift of its people, it's dying a spiritual death. America has had one foot in the grave for years. But it's good that people like you and I that understand the root cause of the problems that we have are here today and everywhere to stand up against this oppression, because that's what it is. I think it was Stephen Biko who said, the mind of the oppressor, of the oppressed, is the greatest weapon in the arsenal of the oppressor. So, if the oppressor can control your mind, then he controls you and what you do. I saw an article this morning that said, what creates your problem is your head. That your head stops you or holds you back. And I thought about that. And I say, yes, that's true, depending on what's in your head. The head is the storehouse of the brain. So if the brain is controlled by the oppressor, then you are not free. And if you are not free, you can't move to do what you need to do in order to help build a more just world. So it's up to each and every one of us to be a free thinker, to control our brain and not let the oppressor control it. Because if they do, then you become a tool for that oppressor. You hear people talk about the lives of our young people or the military people that are heroes that go and slaughter people thousands of miles away from home. They're not heroes. They are tools, tools of a country that oppresses people. Tools of a country that have representatives elected by the people that no longer represent them. When money becomes the main interest of a politician in order that he can get reelected, then the people become secondary to what they'll do, because they'll work for those who give them the money. That's the problem. I've heard people speak of how Ferguson is 6 to 7% black, but yet they have a white mayor, a white district attorney, one white on the police force, or 3 whites on the police force out of 53 whites and 3 blacks. So I think about how we as a people, and I'm speaking of brown people, come out to vote many only every 4 years in a presidential election, when the most effective thing to do is go and vote for the people in your local districts. Because if you get a mayor, a chief of police, or prosecutor, or judges that you vote for and put in, most likely they will carry out what you want them to do. But when you sit and wait and hope that by going and voting every 4 years that the federal government's going to turn it around, you're a fool. What happens depends on what starts at home. And at home is your local government. I was really ticked off in 2002 when the Pentagon came up with that No Child Left Behind Act. Section 9528 was slipped in there by a congressman from Louisiana named Bittner. That section of the No Child Left Behind Act states that every school that get any funds from the military must turn over to military recruiters all data on students and must be allowed to come in and recruit in the schools like any other recruiter from a college. But it's not the same. The military is not a career that moves you in the direction or on the path you want to go or you need to go. The last newest slogan the military have is follow a path with purpose. And I looked at that and I said, what the hell do they mean? I was part of that military for years. If the purpose is to go to kill, to destroy, to take resources from people all over the world, then that's the wrong damn path and our young people should not be following it. So what we should do is began to look at all of these things that creates the problems for all of us. And it's not just a black problem. You got class in there. Class also, when the recruiters go into those schools, they go in and most of the people they get are the people on the lower end of the economic scale. And it's designed that way. After the Vietnam War ended and the draft was abolished, the Pentagon came up with a new term of the people that they get, and they called them professional soldiers, all volunteer military. But it is all volunteer, but they still have a draft. It's called a poverty draft. So until we recognize and stand up and fight those issues, our children marching year after year into lands, putting their lives on the line, and coming back those who are lucky and being hailed as heroes for the murders they commit in foreign lands. It's up to us to stop it. Get the recruiters out of the schools with that propaganda. Children go to school to learn how to communicate or to survive in a civil society, not to become cannon fodder for a country that continuously go and fight immoral wars.
Thank you, Brother Will. My takeaway from that conversation we just had is simply this. If equal protection laws are not challenged or supported when they operate and are implemented fairly for all of our citizenry, we lose rights. I heard the brother say, from his life experience that he's gained a great deal of insight. And let us value him for bringing it, and let us move forward as we use it. So now, a young man who I met, who has been a stalwart in this industry called labor relations, is Jonathan Rosenblum. But let me say a moment. When the Forward Together movement was coming together, coalition building and identifying friends and partners and allies, this gentleman showed me that he was thoroughly in touch with most of the organizations around Madison. So we're going to ask him now to come forward and bring to us his approach, understanding mission and challenge for equal rights under the law.
I don't know if this is going to stay consistent in voice, but I'll do my best, because I wouldn't use this right here, but it is a good idea for us to make some noise so people out there realize something's going on here on a Sunday. Hey out there. Nice photo. It is Sunday, and there's probably nobody who has taught me more in the immediate sense about preaching on a Sunday than Will. Boy, when we sang some gospel together, did we not, recently in church? When Reverend Barber came to town. And it was 10 months ago today, roughly, that I was in North Carolina, back in a way to my second home where I went to school. And I was actually taking my brother to a baseball camp, my son, rather, to a baseball camp. And I had been in touch with a labor rights stalwart advocate, Saladin Muhammad, in North Carolina, with whom I had worked years earlier on the issue of labor rights in North Carolina for public sector workers. Can you believe it? 1960s Memphis, 2000 North Carolina. Little did we know what we would soon have here. And so I knew there was this church in Goldsboro, North Carolina, that I needed to get to, and that Saladin could introduce me to, and that was the church of Reverend William Barber, Greenleaf Christian Church. And so I called Saladin and asked him if he could give an introduction, and he did so. And myself and a friend went to church on that Sunday while the kid was playing baseball in another church known as a baseball stadium. And I heard Reverend Barber preach. We were told that if we didn't get there, we were slow in Durham, we had to get there, but that if we got there, church started at 10, if we got there by noon, we'd still get to hear him preach. Now, I don't want to say that he had been preaching since 10 a.m., but when we arrived there, the sermon was about the still small voice of Ezekiel. I will never forget that, because Reverend Barber, as a preacher, brought that still, the ironies, the power, the contrast of that still small voice to the congregation, and obviously so far beyond that. And I was so pleased at that time to be able to say to him, "You gonna come and visit us in Wisconsin?" And he said, of course. And he did. And so as a Sunday, and to try to channel these still small voices into listenable, hearable voices, I thought, look, equal protection under the law didn't just come from a bunch of legislators sitting down, and it didn't even just come from the suffering of so many, many millions of people in this country under the burden of racism. The principles that we hear are principles that were stated or attempted to be stated at the earliest times. And so the Deuteronomist in Deuteronomy, I am no preacher, by the way, Will is the preacher and Reverend Barber, but I cannot help but say on a Sunday that, you know, the lines in Deuteronomy, thou shalt, you know, you shall not turn to the left or right, but you shall seek justice, impartiality of justice. It's strange because, of course, we wish to bring up the poor, but in terms of understanding and measuring justice, the blind eye of justice is essential. And so those lines that I grew up with as a kid and that continue to resound in all, in every faith, justice, justice, thou shalt pursue. And the principle of equal protection is derived back to those days of not turning left or right to pursue justice. And I just want to, out of this, refer, I have to go to text. I'm a lawyer. I'm not a preacher, but a little bit of text can I can read and review. Obviously, I should know the 14th Amendment of the Constitution by heart, but there's a lot of law to get. But no state shall deny any person the equal protection of the laws. And to add to that, no shall not deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Well, I'm not going to talk about what within its jurisdiction or what the other principles mean, but I do want to say a few things about specifically about equal protection under the laws as we look at this, as we consider and as we fight for this today. I want to refer back to when the Equal Protection Clause was adopted back in the 1860s, when you forget that the clause itself is the 14th Amendment. It goes way back. And as it was being debated, and remember, it's the 14th Amendment, it's after the 13th Amendment. So with the end of slavery, what did the states do? They all passed codes to prohibit blacks from exercising their rights. And so the 14th Amendment was specifically addressed to remedy what was immediately becoming not merely an unequal situation, but absolute denial, nullification of protection under the law. And so here is what one of the framers of the 14th Amendment said on the very day that the debates were going on, Jacob Howard, senator from Michigan, that the Equal Protection Clause must be ratified in order to, quote, prohibit the hanging of a black man for a crime for which the white man is not to be hanged. It protects the black man in his fundamental rights as a citizen with the same shield which it throws over the white man. There ought not the time to be now passed over with when one measure of justice is to be meted out to a member of one caste while another and a different measure is meted out to the member of another caste. Both castes being alike, citizens of the United States, both bound to obey the same laws, to sustain the burdens of the same government, and both equally responsible to justice and to God for the deeds done in the body. You don't hear that very much, but we need to go back sometimes to the source and hear the inspiration for the Equal Protection Clause. And so let's leap from there back into our immediate history, or we could go on like a Sunday sermon at Greenleaf Church beginning at noon and going on till 3 p.m. or so. You didn't agree to do that. In the spontaneity, though, of a Sunday morning, and in reference, one must reference family in some ways, the family we create here and the family that we come here with. And as you asked me about the Equal Protection Clause, one of my deepest resentments as a lawyer over the last 3 years is that I've had to think so narrowly about labor rights as one of the rights, because that's an area that I've worked in. But it is so frustrating to not have the time at times until a request like this to really move back out and feel and consider all the rights that equal protection has been denied. My sister has helped me in this, so I refer to my family because my sister became the first woman attorney general of the state of Oregon 2 years ago. And as one of her first challenges as the Attorney General of the state of Oregon, the right wing there said, there's a constitutional amendment, Attorney General Rosenblum, that states that There is no equal protection for marriage in the state of Oregon. And if the gay community wishes to marry in the state of Oregon, that is prohibited, as it is in the state of Wisconsin. And so you must nullify any action, any law that violates that constitutional principle in the state of Oregon. And my sister declared about 8 months ago that she would refuse to enforce an unconstitutional, a violation of equal protection of the laws in the state of Oregon. And she taught me, I'll give a round of applause to my sister, who became one of the first law enforcement officers in this country to take that step. And so it was that months later, a federal court agreed with her that the defense of marriage through denial of marriage was unconstitutional. And that test will come, perhaps through a case in Wisconsin, to the U.S. Supreme Court very soon. And thankfully, in Wisconsin, at least provisionally, marriages have also been allowed to take place. So there is one very current matter of equal protection that we consider under the law, but there are so many others. And obviously, when you hear about racial profiling, you're not only hearing about the habits and the application of administrative procedure in the most racist sense, but you're hearing about violations of equal protection. And today, as Will has described so powerfully, the racial profiling that is going on in so many places, and notably in Ferguson. And let me just add to what Will said about the racial composition of Ferguson that leads to such extreme decisions, such extreme injustices, but to refer also to what has taken place on the streets of Ferguson, as some of you may have seen through an activist research group called Arch City that was published through Newsweek very recently, and to see how equal protection can be violated in the most insidious way. And you don't know that it's going to lead in a certain moment to a person jaywalking on the streets of Ferguson, who is treated as a criminal, identified for a stop, and then things accelerate from there, as you know. So what happened in Ferguson in the context of the lack of equal protection, as this group Arch City has pointed out, is that the city itself has been seeking fees from the poorest of the poor. It's established its very structure of support for government by stops, arrests, fines, to initially nickel and dime, but then crush, shoot, kill. And so in the city of Ferguson, the research city pointed out that blacks have been more than twice as likely as whites to be searched in these stops. To begin with, more stops against African Americans by far than whites, and that blacks are twice as likely to be arrested, the numbers being about 10% compared to 5%. But note that the searches, when they take place, yield some 30%+ of whites carrying contraband, 20% of blacks. In terms of the search that's taking place, their basis for their searches and their extreme focus has a very clear patina, or more, an obvious underlining of racial profile, which is one of the essential violations of the Equal Protection Clause, and that we must act upon. So with respect to the laws and the other issues in summary form, so that I give this microphone back quickly, let me just give you a list of where I think clearly we need to go, but where equal protection itself is failing us under this administration here in Wisconsin and in so many other places. I'm going to also conclude with what may be a little bit of a departure from the pure equal protection law, but with an endorsement of something that this Dane County and NAACP has recently proposed with respect to ensuring equal protection of our citizens on the streets of our state and our city. So, the issues that we obviously have been facing here in Wisconsin that are violations of equal protection, in my view, and that we must work hard and leave here and gather our friends together and take action on. Equal pay. Under this administration, the protections for equal pay, and particularly for women, have been repealed. And so Wisconsin has lost the compensatory damage and punitive damage provisions that protected equal pay for equal in this state. That cannot stand. It's time to change it. Voter ID. We don't have to say, that's right. In North Carolina, there have been some of the most extreme actions against the public for requiring voter IDs. And alas, very recently, a federal judge appointed by Republicans declined to enjoin the effectiveness of the voter ID provisions in North Carolina. Although in Wisconsin, the voter ID extremes that this administration went to have been enjoined in part, those are still subject to review. We must work absolutely overtime to protect our rights and the rights of minorities as voters. And it was an African-American plaintiff from Mississippi who has been one of the central plaintiffs in the voter ID action in Wisconsin. We must support the protections of our right to vote. And take note that we already did lose the right to voting provisions on weekends and at night under this administration. We did not enjoin everything. We have lost rights. We've talked about the right to marry. We've talked about worker rights. Don't forget that the action under Act 10 and the lawsuits that followed were demands for equal protection. They were demands for equal protection because this administration chose to protect law enforcement and I don't begrudge those who work in law enforcement. They have a right to collective bargaining, they have a right to fair wages, to protection of their pensions, and to health care, as we all do. What is not acceptable, what cannot stand, is taking those rights away from other workers, beginning with public sector workers. And you know who was next. There's just this little political matter going on somewhere, writ small, that some promises might have been made to avoid going right on to the private sector and destroying labor rights. But that is next. When you ask in that sense, was it Reinhold Niebuhr, the question of who is next, who will be next if you do not stand against it, we better stand. And on that issue of worker rights, it is a fundamental right to associate, as the NAACP created the right in the United States to association through its lawsuit in whatever year it was. So is that right fundamental to workers, and it must be protected. Well, there's one issue I'd like to bring home, and this is perhaps a little bit of a move from formalities of law and equal protection. But I did see a press release from our great new Dane County NAACP saying that they thought that it was probably time to meet with our law enforcement authorities here to try to make sure there are protections on the street and in our courts and elsewhere. But most immediately, what we've learned from Ferguson is look out for that street. Look out for that street. We hear the sirens going right now, whatever is going on the street. And so let me just say this. We did not ever ask for equal protection by Bearcat. We asked for it and we demanded it under law. And so it is absolutely essential. And I think that it must be pushed ahead of any other place that's moving slowly. Take that, what you have proposed, and let us all get together and move as swiftly as we can to take action and back that. And that is to commend, I very much commend to the NAACP, a joint, a coalition action calling for return to the federal government, or maybe the National Guard, of armored vehicles and symbolically any other military equipment obtained from this so-called war fighting to crime fighting policy of the Pentagon that has come to our local towns. It's a campaign by the Pentagon to send what it calls crime fighting vehicles, and what it really is war fighting to citizen killing, to citizen profiling, and to citizen killing. And this is a fundamental matter of equal protection, and we must regard it as that. And if it takes a symbolic act like that to let people focus on this, so be it. But there are so many things riding on that. And so it's not the cheer that I would lead perhaps in most other settings. It's not necessarily a chant at all, but I would say we must win back our rights. Join me. We must win back our rights. We don't say give back our rights. We must win back our rights. They must give back that Bearcat. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jonathan. One of the things I was thinking about for this day, talking about equal rights, and I did this. I did an outreach to the Outreach Center and asked them to join us today so that they could bring a voice to issues, conditions, laws, poverty, and causes affecting our brothers and sisters who may be gay. They were not able to join us, but I'm so glad Jonathan brought forth a living example of how rights are being eroded. I'm reminded of a time when I was a little kid in Mississippi and we would make mud mountains. We would make mud mountains made out of dirt and water. And then it would rain. And you would see the rain just kind of erode that mountain away. And you could watch that mountain decrease in size until it was back flat with the earth. I believe this question of rights erosion is bigger than we think. Yep. I'm so glad that we have people who are willing to stand up individually, collectively in our organizations. And I think one of the fundamental causes of action for the Forward Together Wisconsin Coalition would be in this area. Now, I want to take us back a minute to our singers who have been graciously waiting to bring us another song. Following them, Brother Will wants to come back to the phone, microphone here, and then we'll prepare for our march around the Capitol. Unless Brother First Vice President would like to, before we get, all right. Here's our singer.
We sang this song yesterday, but I think it's really important, and maybe we will do it every day. This is a song that was written by Granny Sheila here after the murder of Mike Brown and what happened in Ferguson. And I think that it's an important thing to note here. This was written out of passion. It was written out of what they saw. And we are not saying that all cops are murderers. But we are saying, for those who are not, it is time to do something about your fellow.
Yeah. I just want to say that in terms of equal protection under the law, this morning I read from the ACLU, they got a report from the Ferguson police on the Michael Brown incident, and it is practically blank. It is one page. Absolutely lacking any description on the part of the officer of what happened. On the other hand, some days ago, I read the police report from the alleged shoplifting, allegedly done by Michael Brown, and it was 18 pages long. So much for equal protection under the law, and so much for equal administration of the law, and it's crap like that that made me write this song, which I hope you will join us on the chorus. It's pretty easy to pick up on. This is Bicycle Built for Two, is the tune. You ready? Driving, walking, breathing while being black. It's a crime now for which you'll be shot in the back. Cops have become invaders with war weapons as persuaders. And now they will stalk and kill if you're breathing while being black. Chorus. Driving, walking, breathing while being black. It's a crime now for which you'll be shot in the back. We wondered where this was going, but Ferguson's pain is showing that what we fear is already here if you're breathing while being black. Chorus. Driving, walking, breathing while being black. It's a crime now for which you'll be shot in the back. Mindless killing is not peacekeeping, and we're so tired of weeping. This murder, my cop, simply must stop. Breathing's legal while being black.
I like that.
Okay. We're going to take a granny privilege here. This is a song called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. One of the equal rights issues is campaign financing. And all of us don't have equal rights because money talks. And so this song was written because of exactly that thing. It's called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy.
Did you ever wonder why our health care is in doubt? Why rich folks have the Cadillac plans and poor folks go without? Why all the news that's fit to print is nothing but corporate lies? We've got the best democracy that ever money can buy. Did you ever wonder why we keep on starting wars? Why poor folks' kids are sent to die while CEOs make more? Why votes are counted up by those who sell the voting machines? We've got a corporatocracy, thanks to the Supremes. Did you ever wonder who will run for office since Supreme Court lifted limits? It really makes us wince. The rich will buy the candidates, and if you wonder why, it's because we've got the best democracy that ever money can buy. Those with all the money now will run the whole damn show. And if we dare to disagree, they'll tell us where to go. 'Cause money buys the Congress, and that you can't deny. We've got the best democracy that ever money can buy.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to clear up a few things. All headed like chicken, but I ain't no preacher. Oh, I wanted to say that of all the amendments, I think the most important one is the First Amendment. And that's what we were protesting for back in 2011. If you lose that, then you don't have the power to stand against anything. Because in that amendment, it gives you the right to assemble and to protest. And that is what our governor was trying to deny, those rights. doing the protests and doing the solidarity sing-along. But we won. We're still here. Matter of fact, the solidarity singles broke the Guinness Book World of Record. Nine hundred days we've been here, and we ain't going nowhere until we get this state back at least the way it was before Walker got in. You know, it really hurt me to see the union that Dr. King was speaking of when he was killed. Ask me. That union started right here. Right here is the beginning. It's where that union was born. But yet, we saw it trampled on. So, people, as Clarence Cale, an old friend of mine, used to say, we got a lot of work to do.
Thank you, Brother Will. We had a request from one of our group members here today to bring his voice to this question of equal opportunity, equal rights under the law. I'm going to give him that opportunity. I didn't get your name. Kellen. All right. Come on, brother.
Okay. My name is Kellen Hardy. I live in Monona. When I heard that Outreach couldn't send a representative today, I asked if I could say a few words. I wanted to speak as a queer man to this organization here. First of all, the marriage issue has been the primary issue in the... But as a queer man, it is not the primary issue in my life. In dozens of states, I can still be legally fired for being a gay man. In dozens of states in the United States, that has to change. It is not just marriage. Marriage is a huge issue because it's a basic civil right. It's a basic right for all of us, and so it's meaningful to our community, but it is not the only issue. We have brothers and sisters getting beaten and killed for being gay, for being trans. We have police also picking on us, not nearly the way they pick on African Americans, but we also don't get the attention when we call 911 for help the way that straight, white, middle-class folks do. So I wanted to bring that up because I think it's very important. I also think it's very important that we are all in this fight together. If I do not have equal rights as a gay man, then my Latino brothers and sisters do not have equal rights, and my African American brothers and sisters do not have equal rights. If any one of us does not have equal rights, then all of us are losing in this society, and we need to fix that for every one of us. I am with you, and I hope you are with me. We are all in this together. Thanks and peace.
When one voice is lifted, many will be lifted. So equal protection under the law, as you've heard today, should be a moving force for us going forward over the next 3 or 4 days. Tomorrow, the Beloit Youth Chapter of the NAACP will be here to lead us in what's called Youth Monday. We are looking at, I'm excited about them being here and excited about them bringing their voice to the 7 days of action. As we begin to close out this afternoon, we're gonna have our closing prayer by the first vice president, and then we'll be ready for our march around the Capitol, which we plan to end our day each day. So tell your friends. I got up early this morning sending out emails of faces that I hadn't seen over the last couple of days. But tell your friends that we're gonna be here to raise voices for 7 days on issues that we are addressing in our coalition and as part of the NAACP's overall agenda and the Forward Together Wisconsin. So before I bring the first vice president here, I'd like us to, as we did yesterday, raise our hands in commemoration of young brother Michael Brown and repeat after me. Hands raised. Don't shoot.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you, Greg. Thank all of you for being here again tomorrow. Please encourage people you know to bring children out, young people beside the Beloit children can actually have an opportunity to speak on this program. So bring children out tomorrow and support the kids from Beloit. I want to just say we got two things to do. Let me give you the order. I'm going to say the prayer. Then we're going to go and take that picture that we have to take with Jonathan as the keynote today in a place of really honor. So whenever people look at that picture, they'll know it was Jonathan's day. So with that, and then we'll take the sign and we'll go out and do some civil disobedience. We'll march on the street because we are truly a civil disobedience organization. We're not just, you know, we get a permit, but we have to show that we got a little, right? So with that said, I'm going to close with, one thing I want to mention. I'm sure you all saw the news story. The police officers now who are out protesting and fighting for their rights. That is a very scary, for me, frightening thing that we got police officers out now marching saying that we should have rights to do what? So please take that into consideration. Give it some thought. Greg mentioned that he had invited someone from the gay community to come and speak. So what happens when you are inclusive and people know that they're welcome? Home, thank you for coming forward. He's been with us on, I think, every day since we started, and we didn't know what you were. We just know that you're a good person who wants to see other people justice. So thank you for coming forward and speaking for the gay community. And when you speak for the gay community, you speak for my daughter. And I'll tell you guys a story one day about my beautiful daughter who's gay. And I'll tell you now, she was a student at Antioch College, the most liberal college in the world. She called me one night crying, said, "Dad, I can't take it anymore." And I'm saying, "Baby, what is the matter?" "Well, it's this black guy and these white boys that are just beating up on me and my friends." I said, "Well, why?" "Well, they just don't like us." And I said, "Why? Tell me why." "You know I'm gay and I didn't have to tell you." So my point, I said to my daughter, I said, "Listen, you know, I knew she was gay. I was going to Project Q with her all the time." And I said, "But now you cannot allow people to kill you." She said, "What do you mean?" "Now, I'm the peace activist. I am the guy who started the Ambassadors for Peace program. You cannot," I said, "you can't allow a person to kill you. Why are you saying he's trying to kill me?" I said, "Because he's trying to deny you your right to be who you are. And if you allow another person to do that, you have in effect allowed that person to kill you." And I say, "When a person try to kill you, your daddy tells you to do what you have to do to protect yourself, and they just cut his head off." "What do you mean?" I said, "Go to the dean tomorrow with your group and tell them that your father is a crazy radical from Wisconsin who will go anywhere in the world to protect you, and that if they don't do something about these boys, Antioch College will not be Antioch College." My daughter and her friends went to the dean. Those guys were out of there, and they had been terrorizing people. So my point is, stand up. So I have to tell you about my people. With that, I'm going to conclude with this prayer. And this is from Reverend Barbara again. "Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of heaven and earth. You are the author of justice, and we ask that you write your justice on our hearts, that we may live your justice in our world. May we express your justice as we bear witness, as we vote, as we stand with our neighbors, as we march for what is right. May we restore your world in justice as we partner our work with yours." Amen. Thank you for being here.